If you join me in Bible study tonight, please open up your Bibles to the book of 1 Samuel, to chapter 28. And we will begin today in a section where Saul has been told by the Lord that he's going to die, his sons are going to die, and he's run off and found a medium to hold a seance to bring up the soul of Samuel the prophet. And Samuel the prophet just lambastes him and says, "I taught you better than that, son." Of course, I'm paraphrasing. And he's told in verse 19, as we left off last week, "Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with you into the hand of the Philistines." Meaning the Lord is going to give the Philistines the power to overpower Israel and to take Saul. It says, "And tomorrow," as in the day after tonight, "you and your sons will be with me," meaning dead. "Lord will also deliver the army of Israel into the hand of the Philistines." So when we come to verse 20, where we start today, Saul is just devastated by the prophecy, if you will, that Samuel's dead soul has just given to him. And at this point, I'm sure he's wishing he had never gone to a medium in violation of God's commandment to call up the spirit of Samuel. So what happens in verse 20? It says, "Immediately Saul fell full length on the ground and was dreadfully afraid because of the words of Samuel." How many of us would react the same way if a prophet from the Lord that we know is a true prophet of the Lord says, "Tomorrow you're going to be dead as a doornail"? It would really hit you hard. And it did Samuel, not just Samuel, but his sons. And the nation of Israel is going to be severely damaged by the Philistines. It says, "And there was no strength in him, for he had eaten no food all day or all night." Why was he fasting? He was fasting hoping that the Lord would change his mind. When Saul had failed to destroy all the Amalekites, the Lord had told him that he would not continue on the throne, that his sons would not get to be kings of Israel after him. But he continued to reign until he sought the witch at Endor. And at that point, the Lord says, "It's over." And Saul really thought, maybe if I fast, maybe I can change the Lord's mind. Maybe the Lord didn't mean what he said, but he did. Verse 21, "And the woman came to Saul and saw that he was severely troubled, and said to him, 'Look, your maidservant has obeyed your voice, and I have put my life in my hands and heeded the words which you spoke to me. The scripture says you shall not suffer a witch to live.'" Saul had driven out all the witches, mediums, wizards, etc. from the land, except he's missed one, this witch at Endor. And she says, "I knew I was taking my life in my own hands when I did this for you. But now please don't take my life." She's afraid that Saul's going to reach out and strike her. "Now therefore, please heed also the voice of your maidservant, and let me set a piece of bread before you and eat, that you may have strength when you go on your way." She's interested in having Saul leave her presence as quickly as possible. So she's willing to give him some food if that will get him on his donkey and get him on the way. But he refused and said, "I will not eat." So his servants, together with the woman, urged him, and he heeded their voice. Yeah, this was always Saul's problem. He would ignore the voice of the Lord, but he would heed the voice of those around him. That is, he would take man's word over God's word, and that's what got him into trouble. "Then he rose from the woman and sat on the bed. Now the woman had a fatted calf in the house, and she hastened to kill it. And she took flour and kneaded it and baked unleavened bread from it." Why unleavened bread? She doesn't want to take the time to let the bread rise. She wants Saul to be fed and to leave her house in her presence just as soon as possible. Verse 25 says, "So she brought it before Saul and his servants, and they ate. Then they rose and went away that night." Somebody's just messaged me that says they can't log in. They've tried 5 times, but looks like we have 34 connections and everybody else seems to be getting in okay. Okay, so let's go on to chapter 29. In chapter 29, verse 1, it says, "Then the Philistines gathered together all their armies at Aphek, and the Israelites encamped by a fountain, which is in Jezreel." Jezreel is the large valley where Armageddon will take place. It's one of the best battlefield locations in all the world, according to Napoleon and several other generals who fought major battles there. "And the lords of the Philistines passed in review by hundreds and by thousands, but David and his men passed in review at the rear with Achish." Remember, David is still with the Philistines. He's been hiding with them out of Saul's presence, because even though Saul keeps swearing on the name of the Lord that he won't harm him, Saul keeps changing his mind. "Then the princes of the Philistines said, 'What are these Hebrews doing here?' And Achish said to the princes of the Philistines, 'Is this not David, the servant of Saul, king of Israel, who has been with me these days or these years? And to this day I have found no fault in him since he defected to me.'" So the king says, yes, this is David. But remember, this is David who's got a problem with Saul. And Saul's been trying to kill him, and David's been a loyal, faithful servant to me all these months. It's been 4 months at least. And David has not brought any insurrection in the Philistines' ranks, as far as the king knows. Now, you and I know that David's been going out on raids, raiding Israel's enemies. But the king of the Philistines doesn't know that. He thinks David's been a faithful, loyal soldier. "But the princes of the Philistines were angry with him. So the princes of the Philistines said to him, 'Make this fellow return, that he may go back to the place which you have appointed for him, and do not let him go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he become our adversary.'" Meaning, king, are you out of your mind? If we let these Hebrew soldiers go down on our rear flanks, what happens if they decide to fight for Israel? Now we're caught between the two sides, and we've got a two-front war, and it's going to be a horrible thing. So they don't trust David, nor should they, because David is not a friend of the Philistines. David's heart is still very much loyal to his Hebrew brothers. And for those people who just joined us, we're in 1 Samuel chapter 29. We're at the end of verse 4, where it says, "For with what could he reconcile himself to his master, if not with the heads of these men?" This is actually good thinking. They're saying, what would reconcile him back to Saul more quickly than bringing the heads of the Philistine army? That was pretty good thinking. And then they go back to that refrain from 1 Samuel chapter 18. "Is this not David, of whom they sang to one another in dances, saying, 'Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s? The answer is yes, that's exactly the David that has joined the ranks of the Philistines. I'm not sure if Achish had ever heard these words, but he's thinking, you know what, you're starting to make sense. If David has made a name for himself slaughtering us, maybe I shouldn't be so trusting. So in verse 6, "Then Achish called David and said to him, 'Surely as the Lord lives,'" and notice how Lord is spelled there. So Achish, king of the Philistines, is taking an oath on the name of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. "Surely as the Lord lives, you have been upright. And you're going out and you're coming in with me, and the army is good in my sight." He says, "I'm proud of the way you served me so far. For to this day I have not found evil in you since the day of your coming to me. Nevertheless, the lords," meaning the princes, "do not favor you." And by princes here, it doesn't mean the sons of the kings. It means the commanders of the Philistine armies that lead the armies of the king. He says, they don't trust you. I trust you, of course, Dave. I trust you completely, but they don't. And I got to listen to them. Well, they got a lot of swords. Therefore, return now and go back home and go in peace, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines. If he'd been thinking, he might have said, why don't we just slaughter you and all your Hebrew soldiers? But instead he says, go in peace. And they do. So David said to Achish, but what have I done? He says, why do you send me away? How have you found fault in me? What did I do wrong? And to this day, what have you found in your servant as long as I have been with you, that I may not go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king? Then Achish answered and said to David, I know that you are as good in my sight as an angel of God. It should actually read, as the angel of God. Nevertheless, the princes of the Philistines have said, he shall not go up with us to the battle. So Achish explains, no, David, I have no problem with you. You've never done anything wrong in my sight. You've been a trusted advisor. I've kept you close to myself because I trust you that much. But they don't trust you. And I need them when we go into battle. So verse 10 says, now therefore rise early in the morning with your master's servants who have come with you. And as soon as you are up early in the morning and have light, depart. So David and his men rose early to depart in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines, and the Philistines went up to Jezreel. So David will not join in the battle against the Israelite army. What would have happened had he gone along with the Philistines remains to be seen, but I have a feeling he would have turned on the Philistine army just as they were suspicious. In chapter 30, verse 1, we find that the Amalekites are not all dead. Whenever we study the book of Esther, and we read about Haman, who is the descendant of the Amalekites, people always say, but the Amalekites were all slaughtered. There aren't any Amalekites left. But there were, and there still are. So we learn in 1 Samuel chapter 30, verse 1, that there are still Amalekites in the world. As it reads, now it happened, or should be, and it happened, when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day. Interesting, on the third day. That the Amalekites had invaded the south. See, the Amalekites are not all dead. They have enough to have formed an army to invade the south. And it goes on to say, in Ziklag, attacked Ziklag and burned it with fire, and had taken captive the women and those who were there, from small to great. They did not kill anyone, but carried them away and went their way. Lest you forget the significance of Ziklag, that's where David and his Hebrew soldiers were staying. So when the Amalekites come and take Ziklag, burn it with fire, and take all the women and children, this is David's wives and his soldiers' wives. These are not Philistines. So they have taken captive all the Hebrews that were there at Ziklag, including the wives and children of David. Verse 3. And why did not the men of Ziklag defend it? Because they were all with David away with the Philistine army. So David and his men came to the city, and there it was, burned with fire. And their wives, their sons, and their daughters have been taken captive. The Amalekites have always hated the Israelites. And when they saw Ziklag unguarded, they said, this is the perfect time to take vengeance on our enemies. When there are no men around to defend it. The Amalekites were not what you would call brave warriors. They're absolutely willing to attack an unmanned city and attack the women and children, but they're not willing to attack when there are soldiers there to protect it. So David's wives and the other men's wives and their children have been taken captive by the Amalekites. How do you think David's going to react to that? Exactly. Verse 4, then David and the people who were with him lifted up their voices and wept, until they had no more power to weep. So they cry and cry until they don't have any tears left to cry. Then, let's see what happens. Verse 5. And David's two wives, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess and Abigail the widow of Nabal the Carmelite, have been taken captive. So two of David's three wives have been taken captive. His first wife, the daughter of Saul, whose name was Michal, had been taken by Saul from David and given to somebody else. So that's why she wasn't taken captive too. He will later get her back, as somebody mentioned last week. Yes, he will. But at the moment, David's got to go after his own wives. Verse 6. Now David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, that is, the Hebrew soldiers that had been with them, blamed David rather than the Amalekites. If you hadn't taken us out to battle with the Philistines, then we would have been here to defend our women and children. So verse 6, now David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and his daughters. I'm sure for their wives too, that's just implied. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. So all David does is say, have you forgotten the Lord? The Amalekites can't get away with this. The Lord's going to give us the victory. Verse 7, then David said to Abiathar the priest, Ahimelech's son, please bring the ephod here to me. And Abiathar brought the ephod to David. Abiathar's a priest. He's got the ephod, which means he's going to inquire of the Lord on behalf of David. So David inquired of the Lord, saying, but the way he inquires is through the priests and the ephod, saying, shall I pursue this troop? Shall I overtake them? Rather than taking things into his own hand and saying, look, I'm a mighty warrior, I can go do this, he says, let's ask the Lord, should we do it? And he inquires of the Lord, shall I pursue this troop? Shall I overtake them? And he, the Lord, answered him, David, pursue, for you shall surely overtake them, and without fail recover all. Meaning a complete and total victory is assured. Every wife and every child that was taken will be restored. That's a beautiful promise. So David went, he and the 600 men who were with him, and came to the brook Besor, where those stayed who were left behind. But David pursued, he and 400 men, for 200 stayed behind, who were so weary that they could not cross the brook Besor. So David only had 600 soldiers, and two of them are so exhausted from going back from the battlefield of the Philistines back to Ziklag, through the emotional turmoil of finding the wives and children gone, that they say, we just can't go on with you. And David says, hey, 400's enough. The Lord said complete victory, 400's plenty. What is he evidencing? Faith, true faith. Then they found an Egyptian in the field and brought him to David, and they gave him bread and he ate, and they let him drink water. They gave him a piece of a cake of figs and two clusters of raisins. So when he had eaten, his strength came back to him, for he had eaten no bread nor drunk water for 3 days and three nights. If he's not had any bread or water for 3 days and three nights, he's very near the point of death. You can go more than 3 days without food, but without water in a desert area, that's hard. But when they give him the food and the water and the things of comfort, then he realizes that he's among friends. Then David said to him, to whom do you belong and where are you from? He said, I'm a young man from Egypt, servant of an Amalekite. Ooh, a servant of an Amalekite. They're the ones that took the wives and children. So this Egyptian man knows where the Amalekites have gone. He says, and my master left me behind, because 3 days ago I fell sick. his master left him behind to die. And instead of killing him, David and his men have given him food, water, and strength. So who will his loyalties be? For those who just arrived, we're in 1 Samuel chapter 30, verse 14. He said, "We made an invasion of the southern area of the Keratites in the territory which belongs to Judah and of the southern area of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag with fire." So David now knows these are the right Amalekites. They're the ones who took our wives and children. And David said to him, "Can you take me down to this troop?" In other words, do you know where they've gone? Do you know how to get to the camp? So he said, that is, the Egyptian says, "Swear to me by God that you will neither kill me nor deliver me into the hands of my master, and I'll take you down to this troop. Swear that you won't kill me nor return me to my master, because my master would kill me for having brought you to him and shown you where the camp is." So that makes sense. That sounds like a good deal. And at verse 16 we read, "And when he had brought him down, there they were, spread out over all the land, eating and drinking and dancing, because of all the great spoil which they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from the land of Judah." So Ziklag was not the only city that they sacked, the only place they attacked. They've been going around and attacking anyone that they thought they could get an easy victory and lots of booty. Verse 17, "Then David attacked them from twilight until the evening of the next day. Not a man of them escaped except 400 young men who rode on camels and fled." So David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away, and David rescued his two wives. Notice it was just as the Lord had said up in verse 8. It was a complete and total victory, and without fail, he recovered everything. Every wife, every son, every daughter. Not just that, but they also take away some booty of their own. It says, "And nothing of theirs was lacking, either small or great, sons or daughters, spoil or anything which they had taken from them." David recovered all. "Then David took all the flocks and herds that they had driven before those other livestock and said, 'This is David's spoil.'" In other words, after recovering everything the Amalekites had taken from Ziklag, he also recovers all the booty they've taken from other places. So things that did not originally belong to the Hebrew children down in Ziklag. And that's why they call it spoils of war. Verse 21. "Now David came to the 200 men who had been so weary that they could not follow David, whom they also had made to stay at the brook Besor. So they went out to meet David and to meet the people who were with him. And when David came near the people, he greeted them." So David is friendly to them. But what about the other 400 that went with David? Are they going to be as forgiving? Let's read. Verse 22, "Then all the wicked and worthless men of those who went with David," yeah, see, not all the 400 were good, upright, godly men. "So all the wicked and worthless men of those who went with David answered and said, 'Because they did not go with us, we will not give them any of the spoil that we have recovered, except for every man's wife and children, that they may lead them away and depart.'" In other words, they can have their wives and their children back, yes, but all this cattle and livestock that we've recovered, they shouldn't get a share of that. Is that David's attitude? No. Verse 23, "But David said, 'My brethren, you shall not do so with what the Lord has given us.'" In other words, soldiers, please hear me. It was not by our might that we've got this great booty. It wasn't because we're great warriors or we had stronger swords. This was the Lord's doing. He gave us the victory. He gave us the spoil. So to say that I earned it and they don't deserve a share is just a wrong attitude. That's not loving your brother like yourself. So it says, my brethren, you shall not do so with what the Lord has given us, who has preserved us and delivered into our hand the troop that came against us. For who will heed you in this matter? But as his heart is who goes down to the battle, so shall his part be who stays by the supplies. They shall share alike. In other words, all 600 get an equal share, whether they went to the battle or whether they stayed behind. That's quite a wise judgment on the behalf of David. In verse 25, it says, so it was from that day forward, he made a statute and an ordinance for Israel to this day. That is, that's one of the orders that King David gave, is that all those who participate in the battle get a share, as well as those who do not participate in the battle. Verse 26, now when David came to Ziklag, he sent some of the spoil to the elders of Judah, to his friends, saying, here is a present for you from the spoil of the enemies of the Lord. These elders of Judah know that David has been down hiding with the Philistines. So this is David's way of saying, look, I was not with the Philistines. I was hiding from Saul. I'm still one of you. We're still family. We're still kinfolk. To those who are in Bethel, it says, those who are in remote of the south, those who are in Jatir, those who are in Aror, those who are in Siphmoth, and those who are in Estemoah, those who are in Rechai, those who are in the cities of the Jeramelites, those who are in the cities of the Kenites, those who are in Hormah, and those who are in Horashan, those who are in Atak, and those who are in Hebron. That tells you just how large the booty was that David and his few men recovered from the Amalekites. If they were able to send them to all these cities and all these places, they had quite a haul. And verse 31 ends by saying, into all the places where David himself and his men were accustomed to rove. Very smart move. So all these places where David and his bands are likely to be, they're now going to be friendly toward David rather than toward Saul. Why doesn't David know that Saul is going to die this next day? Because he wasn't with Saul when Saul went to the witch at Endor. So he didn't know this. But in chapter 31, we're going to see the death of Saul and his sons. Not all his sons, just most of his sons. Chapter 31, verse 1. Now the Philistines fought against Israel. This is the group under Achish, where they sent David and his men away. So while David and his men are away, this battle has taken place. Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell slain on Mount Gilboa. Well, that is what the Lord had told Saul when he was at the witch at Endor, is that Israel was going to fall to the Philistines, and that's exactly what happens. Verse 2, then the Philistines followed hard after Saul and his sons, and the Philistines killed Jonathan. Yeah, that's the Jonathan that was such friends with David. Abinadab and Malchishua, Saul's sons. And the battle became fierce against Saul. The archers hit him, and he was severely wounded by the archers, meaning he's hit by multiple arrows. And they've caused great pain, great harm, great blood loss. He's not going to survive it. But he is in fierce agony because of it. Verse 4, then Saul said to his armor bearer, draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised men come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, for he was greatly afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell on it. Let's turn over to 1 Chronicles chapter 10 and see some more details. 1 Chronicles chapter 10. First Chronicles chapter 10. verses 13 to 14. Are we there? 1 Chronicles 10, verses 13 and 14. It says, "So Saul died for his unfaithfulness which he had committed against the Lord, because he did not keep the word of the Lord, that is, to destroy the Amalekites, and also because he consulted a medium for guidance," that's the witch in Endor. "But he did not inquire of the Lord. Therefore he," the Lord, "killed him, and turned the kingdom over to David, the son of Jesse." So as Samuel said at Endor, Saul and his sons died this very next day. Verse 5. When I realized in 2 Samuel we're going to read a different account of the death of David, but let's wait till we get there. I want to explain that, because that used to bother me a lot. So therefore, it says at the end of verse 4, Saul took a sword and fell on it. In other words, he commits suicide. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he also fell on his sword and died with him. So his armor bearer commits suicide too. Back in those days, the armor bearer was also kind of like a bodyguard and is responsible for protecting the life of the soldier that he serves. So likely, the armor bearer would have been put to death anyway and knew it. Verse 6, "So Saul, his three sons, his armor bearer, and all his men died together that same day." Verse 6 almost makes it sound like Saul only had three sons, but he's actually got more. These are just all that are in the battle. Some didn't go out to war. Verse 7, "And when the men of Israel who were on the other side of the valley and those who were on the other side of the Jordan saw that the men of Israel had fled and that Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook the cities and fled, and the Philistines came and dwelt in them." In other words, they abandoned the cities and let the Philistines just have them. And they're running for their lives back deeper into the heart of Israel. So it happened the next day when the Philistines came to strip the slain, that is to take all the armors and armaments and any money they might have on them, to literally rob from the graves, that they found Saul and his three sons fallen on Mount Gilboa. And they cut off his head and stripped off his armor, and sent word throughout the land of the Philistines to proclaim it in the temple of their idols and among the people. Why in the temple of their idols? Because they believed that their gods had prevailed over the God of Israel, and that that's how they had managed to get the battle. They don't realize that it was the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob who had said, "Saul, Israel's going to lose and you're going to die." So they're giving praise to the wrong gods, and it's going to cost him in the long run. Then they put his armor in the temple of the Ashtoreths. Of course, Ashtoreth, through many languages into English, becomes Easter. And they fastened his body to the wall of Bethshan. I've been to Bethshan. It's a city that eventually became a Roman stronghold down in Israel. But when it says they fastened his body to the wall, that means literally that they nailed his body to the wall. He was hung on the wall. Yuck. Verse 11. "Now when the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead," which is 20 miles away, "heard what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and traveled all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bashan. And they came to Jabesh," that's Jabesh Gilead, "and burned them there." Normally the children of Israel didn't burn dead bodies. They put them in the grave and let the flesh rot off the body. But remember, they've been hanging on the wall out in the desert sun, which means the bodies are going to be decomposed and putrid and infectious. So that's why they burn the flesh off, and then they will bury the bones. Which is why in verse 13 it says, then they took their bones, that is after the flesh has been burned off, then they took their bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. The fast of 7 days, they were sitting Shiva. They were mourning over the loss of Saul and his sons. Okay, we have finished 1 Samuel. So what do we say? Chazak, chazak, v'nish chazek. Meaning, be strong, and may we be strengthened. But actually, let me turn off the recording, and then we'll start again in 2 Samuel 1.